Hello, everyone. You're listening to America Meditating Radio. We collect wisdom, inspire each other, and empower hearts on demand 24/7. I'm Sister Jenna, host of the syndicated America Meditating Radio. Join us as we talk one-on-one with leading experts who answer life's most compelling questions, because in a world of uncertainty, we need answers right here, right now. America Meditating Radio, a show for everyone to learn more about this amazing thing called life.
When I was a boy, my maternal grandfather and I would go for walks along the Little White River on our northern part of the reservation. We walked all over. We walked along the river, over the hills, across the meadows, the prairies, wherever. And this occurred over a few years, in any season of the year. He just liked to walk. He liked the physical activity to walk, and he liked to look at the land. He liked to point things out to me. And I paid attention. But there was something that he did. We would stop every now and then. And he did this frequently. We would stop and he would grab me by the shoulders and he would turn me around and he would make me look at the trail the way we had come to this point. And he would say, "Remember that trail. Remember the way we came." And I dutifully said, "Yes, Grandpa." He did this a lot. Finally, when I was 7, the year before I went away to school, I worked up the nerve to ask him, "Well, Grandpa, why are you saying this? Why are you making me look back?" And his answer was simple enough, and it fell into place for me years later. He said, "One of these times I'm going to send you back down these trails by yourself. And if you don't remember the way, you will be lost." To me, that is a statement about our past. That big quantifiable past that is there, that is larger than anything in our lives. If we don't know how we got to the point that we are as individuals and as a society, but especially as individuals, then we're lost. Because we don't know where we came from. Not the flamboyant warrior with the feathers in his hair and lance in his hand, which is an iconic image that everybody has of Native people. No, that's not what we were about. That's only part of what we were, only a small part of what we were as people. The other part is compassion and having a purpose and taking care of each other. Those were the most important things. So that's why ancestry is important to me. That's why ancestry should be important to everybody. No matter who we are, whether we're Native or not, no matter what our culture is, no matter what our society is, no matter what our standing in the community is, I don't care what we do for a living, ancestry is important. You have to know the trail that you came down to be at the point that you are as an individual. You have to look back at that trail, the road that you have walked with your ancestors, their values, kind of people they were, the kind of mistakes they made, the kind of accomplishments they had. They're all a part of me. All of that is part of who I am.
Wow. Welcome, everyone, to America Meditating Radio. That was Joseph Marshall, Remember the Way, on Monique Rhodes' album. Wasn't that an interesting one where you have to remember where you come from, remember your ancestors, and you know how I decode that? I look back at my history. I've even taken the 23andMe test, you know, this global research where they check your DNA through your saliva, and it was given to me at the White House when I was there for a program on roots, the screening of roots at the White House. And when I got back my results, it gave me an insight as to the legacy and the heritage that I'm traveling with. And it also helped me to research what were those values, what were those traditions that took place back in the days. And I also came to use my own thinking to also determine that when those values and traditions began the journey downward, where there was corruption from a level of leadership or corruption from a level of authority, it started to breathe that through the whole system of cultures. And then we started to mix our cultures, because if, for example, in the Indian culture, if you're born in a particular group called the Untouchables, then you're saying sustain the Untouchables. You know, if you're not a Brahmin or a Kshatriya or a warrior, whatever other caste systems that they have in India, then they think that by just keeping yourself in order wherever you're born, it just helps to keep the system and everything in play. But if there are people who are abusing the system, and if you're really born because of karmic energy in an area where it's not giving you an opportunity, but you're willing to put that energy in to build yourself up, to get a good job, to get a good spouse, to be in a good environment, to get off the streets, then we should. Because that's what the whole effort is. It's about healing ourselves and getting out of it. So, yes, tradition is good. The values of our ancestors, amazing. Bring those into the current conditioning and also identify what was it that perhaps they missed or broke or forgot, which actually brought us a little bit down to where we are on the conscious level. And when something in the soul doesn't feel right, we can feel it. It's a hunger. There's something in the spirit that says, I need love, I need attention, I need affection, I need security, I need to feel safe. And all of these feelings are valid feelings, and we all have them. Every single one of us carries sometimes these glimpses or consistent feelings within our souls, within our inner being, our internal world. And there is a hunger. There is a hunger. Some of us fill it with cigarettes, alcohol, sex, drugs, and even food. And today our next guest is Tricia Nelson, who lost 50 pounds by identifying and healing the underlying causes of her emotional eating. Tricia has spent nearly 30 years researching the hidden cause of the addictive personality, and she is an emotional eating expert and author of the number one best-selling book, Heal Your Hunger, 7 Steps to End Emotional Eating Now. She is also the host of the popular podcast, The Heal Your Hunger Show. A highly regarded speaker and coach, Tricia has been featured on NBC, CBS, Fox, and Discover Health. Today, we're happy to welcome Tricia Nelson on the air. Hi, Tricia. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Mm-hmm. It's been an interesting journey for you, and you've been doing 30 years of research. Please tell me, what was the catalyst in starting you off with that?
Absolutely. It's definitely personally motivated. I started, I think, as probably a three-year-old, as far back as I can remember. I was very just enthralled with food, and I love to eat. I love to, you know, when I got a little older, I learned how to cook, and so I love to prepare food for other people and serve it and play restaurant and, of course, eat it. So I was definitely an emotional eater from the get-go, although I just thought I liked food. And, you know, the problem for me was that I gained weight, and I was a roly-poly kid, and I didn't like that. I was fatter than my friends. And as I got older, I definitely kept gaining weight. And, you know, it affected my self-esteem. I felt very ashamed of the way that I ate more than my friends. You know, we'd go out to lunch. My friends would order a sandwich and fries, and so would I. And they'd eat their sandwich and pick up their fries, and I'd eat my fries and pick up my sandwich. So I love to eat, and it was all about food for me, and it just really affected my life, and I started to try to, you know, do something about my weight, and so I tried diets and exercise programs and then pills and potions and lotions, as I like to say, and anything that seemed like it would work for me, but of course it didn't, and I continued to fail at dieting. I'd lose weight, but then, you know, I'd lose 30 pounds but gain 20, or lose 10 and gain 10 back, and it was just a real yo-yo for me. And then it came to the point where nothing I tried worked, and I felt very hopeless. And so that was a real turning point for me. I wasn't very old. I was 20 years old, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to spend the rest of my life on this yo-yo, you know, this terrible roller coaster with food, and nothing is going to work for me. And I didn't know, you know, I felt very hopeless and like there was no way out. And fortunately, by God's grace, I met somebody who was able to really explain to me and show me that my problem wasn't food, that it went much deeper than that, and food was only a symptom, and that I was indeed an emotional eater. And what happened is I began to address and heal the underlying causes of my emotional eating, and to heal that hunger that you talked about. And that's really what turned things around for me, is dealing with that hunger and healing that hunger, and then finally, you know, really making peace with myself so I didn't need to use food as an anesthetic, as a crutch, as I had for so many years.
Now, I can imagine how that journey was, especially when eating gives us a lot of satisfaction. I mean, even today when I get cravings of chocolate or what have you, I know that it's satisfying either a nutrient in my body that is in need or something emotional that's in need. And when I got my hypothyroid, I think I gained about maybe 40, at least 43 pounds. I have to tell you, I loved it. I love it, actually. I actually look my age, finally.
You loved gaining weight?
I actually look my age because I would walk into all these huge major conferences and they thought this little girl was coming in, and it took a really high road to try to convince people I had some authority here, believe me.
That's funny.
But anyway, yes, when I did get over to like about 150 and I saw myself actually getting to like 163, I remembered how it made me feel uncomfortable. Now, I know mine was definitely physical because I had gone about 2.5 years, and please, everyone who's listening, don't do this. I did this as my own sort of a spiritual renunciation. I went for about 2 years on one meal a day and perhaps just a little snack, or if I had guests over the house and I would have to eat with them for dinner. And I did that as a conscious effort. But can I tell you, Tricia, my body bloated up even more because it wasn't getting enough food. And so whatever it got, it just held, and it would bloat up more. And I was so perplexed. Why was I bloating up? So I'm bringing us back to the whole food thing. Is there a need for us to actually understand how our body works and the kinds of food that are actually healthy for our body so we don't gain weight and we don't feel out of sorts?
Well, it's very typical for people who are emotional eaters, especially, to skip meals and to eat very erratically, you know, big binges of food and then starving or restricting like you're talking about. And it is bad for the body, and it actually makes it harder to lose weight. And so, you know, people, especially, as I said, people who struggle with weight, they always think, oh, if I skip meals, you know, I'll lose weight. And the problem is, you know, when we skip meals, we get really hungry, and then we compensate, usually at the end of the day when we have no self-control whatsoever, you know, and it just goes on and on and on. We end up eating more calories than we would have had we not skipped a meal. So that erratic diet causes a lot of problems for our bodies, and the best thing we can do for our bodies is eat 3 meals a day, you know, just like Mama told us, you know, like early on. We were fed 3 meals a day, and that's really what works best for our bodies because it gives us continuity. Our bodies know more food's coming. It doesn't go into starvation mode. So, yes, absolutely, more regular meals, and also people oftentimes don't know nutritionally what's best for their bodies. And so, you know, they're eating very high-calorie foods, high-carb foods.
Right.
If somebody's an emotional eater, though, they do that not just for lack of knowledge. They do it also for emotional reasons. You know, the heavier foods, the sugar, the carbs, the fats, those foods anesthetize our emotions. So oftentimes that's why we're drawn. You know, we'd rather eat potatoes rather than broccoli or a banana versus an apple.
Right.
You know, the heavier, more carb-rich foods we eat, the more the food covers our emotions. And again, when somebody's an emotional eater, which I think we all are to some degree, we have that. Yeah, they have that propensity. I think God made us to like food and have an emotional relationship with food to some degree, so we continue to subsist as a you know planet. But I think that emotional tie to food, you know, the stronger the more somebody is an emotional eater, the more likely it is they're going to be eating the wrong foods for emotional reasons.
Mm-hmm. I've often appreciated Oprah's ability to just accept her image and to accept her body type and to accept her body weight, even though she struggled in and out with her dieting and her food. How does one actually know if they are an emotional eater or a food addict? And is there a difference?
Absolutely. You know, I think everybody's an emotional eater to some degree, so it's really a spectrum. You know, I think we're all on the spectrum somewhere. On the low end of the spectrum is somebody who might overindulge a little bit now and then or have a treat because they just feel like it or they're bored or something. And on the high end of the spectrum is somebody who is really, you know, obsessed with food. They think about food 24/7. You know, they're always wanting more, wanting seconds, but then they also lose control. And so they might start out, you know, at the end of the day eating a bowl of cereal, but that turns into a bowl of ice cream, which turns into, you know, a bag of potato chips, and it goes on. And before you know it, they've down 2,000 or 3,000 calories and feel terrible. So that's more on the food addiction side of the spectrum. And so it really is determined by the extent to which somebody loses control and doesn't have control of whether they'll, you know, overeat or not, or eat the sweets or not. Also the consequences somebody will experience, you know, is it affecting their health? Are they doing it anyway in spite of doctors', you know, warnings? Is it affecting their mood? Do they have depression and anxiety because of, you know, the way that they eat and the way the food's physically affecting them, as well as just, you know, feeling bad about themselves because they don't have control? You know, is their spouse saying something to them? Are their kids begging them to lose weight, you know, for fear that they'll have a heart attack? You know, the consequences of overeating, you know, are many, and they are fatal as well. And so it's just really important to realize that it's, you know, we're all on the spectrum. I have a quiz, actually. It's called the Emotional Eating Quiz, and somebody can take that quiz and determine where they are on that spectrum, where they'll get a personalized score, and it'll show them where they are on the spectrum and then what steps they take. So I certainly would love to offer that to people.
And where do they find that quiz?
On my website, it's healyourhunger.com, and right on the first page, they'll find that quiz, and they can take that. It's about 20 questions. It'll definitely, it's not all about food. It's really about one's habits and even one's mindset.
Okay, well, thank you for sharing that. I know that a lot of us have tried a diet, and we have done a diet for various reasons. Some of us, it's for health. Some of us, it's because we're so conditioned to believe that the body of a Renaissance woman is out of fad, which I hope it won't ever be. Because I think the form of a woman being a little bit voluptuous and full, I think that's healthy. And actually, in India, if a woman is too skinny, she's kind of looked upon like she doesn't have any money, she's not doing well, she's unhappy. And I remembered when I was on a green juice diet, Tricia, and my great-great-grandmother's 103, and everybody, I went home, and everyone is like, oh, Jen, you look great. Jen, you look like you're radiating like 1,000 suns. And I think I had gone down to like 135 or something. And I was feeling great, I have to tell you. And then I went to see my great-great-grandmother, and she looked at me. She says, what's the matter? You look weak. And I was like, what? Oh, my God. Everyone says I look great.
Yeah. Our culture is definitely, we've changed.
There's some cultural stigmas here to what it means to be, you know, who we need to look like or feed ourselves like. But let's go back to diets. 98% of people actually fail at a diet. Why is that?
Yeah, it's a staggering statistic, actually, when you consider how much money, I mean, we spend billions of dollars a year on diets, and yet 98% of them, 90% of billions, however many choose your billions, goes down the drain, literally, because people are failing at diets. And the reason really is because of this emotional attachment to food. So it seems to make sense. You know, I'm overweight, or I've got 10 pounds to lose. I'm going to go on this diet or this detox, and I'm going to just slim down. And it seems to be just pure math. You know, you eat less, you exercise more, you're good to go. However, people don't take into account, first of all, their emotional attachment to food. So even if they are eating less for a period of time, you know, the reason why they have that extra weight on their body is because they're emotional eating. You know, they are using food for reasons beyond nutrition. And so if you take that food away from them, all of a sudden those reasons are still there, but they're untreated. So if somebody is eating over their emotions, if it's giving them a feeling of safety, if it's giving them sort of a feeling that nothing's wrong, like they don't feel their feelings, what happens is you remove that excess food, and all of a sudden they have all kinds of feelings, and they're angry, and they're irritable, and they feel insecure or fearful, or they, you know, a number of things, they might be feeling depressed. And what happens is they're not prepared for that. Like, they just were on a diet. Like, they're going to the gym, you know, they're going to work, they're eating less, they're eating their salads and cottage, but they are ill-equipped for the emotional, you know, upheaval that happens when you uncover those emotions. And so what happens is people freak out. They're just like, I don't feel good. I don't like this feeling. You know, I feel unprotected. And they go back to the thing that's most familiar to them, and that is mm-hmm. food. You know, and that's also true for the weight. You know, I mean, people think they want to have a thin body. It's, you know, easy peasy. But they don't know that they can't necessarily handle that thin body, again, because, you know, food serves three primary purposes. And I think this will explain it the best. You know, we overeat for three primary reasons. And I call it the PEP test. It's the P stands for painkiller. So we eat to really cover up pain, so pain or painful emotions. And people don't think of that. Again, we're thinking, oh, I just like food, like I just want a pastry. But if somebody's chronically, you know, eating too much, it's really because it's smoothing over those edges. It's killing that pain. The E in the PEP test stands for escape. And so we eat as a form of escape. You know, oftentimes we're stressed out and we have a lot of fear, like we've got bills, we've got burdens, got a sick parent. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons why, you know, we're overloaded, feeling stressed and feeling afraid. And so we eat to escape. Like, we get our goodies, we sit in front of our television, and we just check out. Like, just leave me alone. I'm not here, you know?
Yeah.
And the third reason is we eat as a form of punishment. That's the last P in the PEP test. And people don't think of eating as a punishment. We usually think of it as a reward. You know, I mean, after mm-hmm. a long day, we go home, we have the I deserve
it
binge.
Of course, it's normal. It's normal.
Yeah, but the thing is, what emotional eaters don't realize is that emotional eaters are very sensitive, and we have very deep feelings. This is part of how we became emotional eaters, is we feel deeply, and we also mm-hmm. feel guilt very easily. So it's very easy us to, feel shame and guilt, and then food, again, it serves as a form of punishment for that guilt that we feel and that we're ruminating over. And so even though it seems like a treat, if you consider, you know, when we take it too far, if you consider how that feels, you know, the next day we're bloated, we don't fit into our pants, we don't want to go out with our friends because we feel disgusting, we just want to lay under, you know, the covers, that really is a punishment. Like, that's what we did to ourselves unknowingly. And so what I say to people is there are underlying drivers. You know, that pain, the fear, and the guilt do drive our emotional eating. And the reason why people don't necessarily know that or are in touch with that is because food's working, you know, like it's doing the job. They don't know the pain and the fear and the guilt's there. But again, if they're, you know, cutting back, that's what's going to show up, is that pain, fear, and guilt. And that's what's going to make somebody uncomfortable. And unless somebody has a system for dealing with that stuff and clearing it off their plate, so to speak, they're going to go back to the food time and time again, hence the 98% of the L diets failing.
Now, your book has been number one for quite a while, Heal Your Hunger, 7 Simple Steps to Ending Emotional Eating. And you have certainly given us some steps that we can take. How's the book still doing? Are you doing any tours with the book? Are you planning to write another book?
Wow. Well, the book has been amazingly well received. I'm so grateful. It really explains a lot for people who are just wondering, why am I doing this? Like, what's wrong with me? That's the number one question we ask ourselves. What's wrong with me? Like, why can't I control myself? So it really does get into that and explain that. I feel like I'm always on tour. So nowadays with podcasts and being able to do this by phone. So I'm virtually all over the country doing interviews for the book. And I actually have a program online that is called 10 Weeks to Freedom from Emotional Eating. So a lot of people, you know, who read the book really love taking my course because it takes them by the hand through how to actually end emotional eating, because there are steps to take. They're not hard, but it helps to have support, and it also helps to have a community of people going through it also, and we do that through a Facebook group. So in terms of another book, I'm actually writing a book of daily meditations, because I recommend meditation and spiritual readings as something we can do to get centered in the morning. And so I'm actually writing a book that has a daily, it's like a daily reader for emotional eaters specifically, for healing one's hunger.
Wow, that's lovely. And do you know when that's going to come out?
I don't have a date for that yet. I actually have another book coming out. I always forget to mention it's coming out shortly this year. It's called the Heal Your Hunger Workshop Interviews. And what I did is I interviewed many leading health experts about how to heal your hunger from many different, you know, realms. So brain health, physical health, thyroid health, as you're talking about. So a lot of different ways that we can, and things that affect our hunger. And so that book is actually coming out in just a couple months on Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good. Congratulations in advance. We can talk about it when it does. Tricia, are you planning to come on the East Coast up to D.C.? We'd love to host your book at the museum. I think it's a very good topic, and I know that people do want to feel healthier. I just think they need more education as to how best to do it.
I would so love to come. So thank you for the invitation.
Oh,
let's talk about
yeah.
that. That'd be great.
Yeah. When you're coming up this part and you're nearby, just let us know. We'd be really honored to host you. I think the topic is really important.
Thank you. It certainly is. I think a lot of people struggle with this, and they don't know what to do about it. And the problem with this problem is that, you know, it's usually secretive. You know, we keep it to ourselves. Although, I mean, if we gain a lot of weight, everybody can see it, but nobody knows what's going on inside of us. And the inside, you know, the mental torment of struggling and suffering with this problem is so hard and so isolating. So I really just want more and more people to understand that there's hope and there's help available.
Oh, lovely, lovely. Well, look, lots of good wishes. Thanks for joining us on air. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, and to be continued.
Thank you so much for having me. It's such a pleasure.
You're welcome. Take care. Bye-bye. This was really helpful for me, everyone, because I used to wonder when I went that 2 years or 2.5 years when I thought I chose not to eat, how I got more bloated, and I felt kind of like unhealthy in a weird way, even though I was doing it for another reason. But I think there is a need for more education, more information as to how best we handle the emotions that we're grappling with. And can you imagine guilt and shame to be one of the biggest hidden emotions that actually comes out in the way that we eat? It's incredible. So please, I hope you like my conversation with Tricia Nelson. You can look out for her on her website that she gave us and her Twitter handle, which I just followed, which is really nice. Forward to communicating with her more. Now remember, no one can take away your happiness unless you give them permission, and we really are here to love each other the same, and so let's do that. And remember, we're going to be Summer of Peace Search, Creating Common Ground, August 7th to 9th, an online summit, and I'll be in Sacramento with Marianne Williamson, Michael Beckwith, Dorothy Huentes, Ronaldo Bruto, and so many more. Oh, Louis Gossett Jr., we're all going to be there looking at how California can be the state that really illuminates a brighter future for the country. So that'll be in Sacramento, California, September 20th to the 23rd. And just go to California Vision 2020. Thank you so much. I'll end the show with a really nice song, something kind of special, I guess, something that can just keep us a little bit on the high side of things and keep us a little bit inspired. What do you say? Here's Helen Melvin and the Blue Notes. Take care, everyone. Mm-hmm.
All the doctors make no